Hi, welcome everybody. I'm not alone and not with James because he sadly couldn't make it because he has very important business stuff to do with the gallery, obviously. But I got good company. We got Dolly, we got Matt and Charm. You all know these guys. We hung out back in 2022 at New York Comic Con a lot. So this kind of bond and WhatsApp group started. And yeah, so here we are again talking about today, about some catch up, what you guys been doing in the last couple months, and also talking about prints and why not every print should be a screen print. But yeah, let's start with Dolly. What's new with you, buddy?
Having a slow start to the year, I purposely took a lot of January off just because last year was the total opposite. Getting back into the flow of things, prints, normal sort of studio stuff going on, planning a lot of 3D stuff for the later part of the year.
What do you mean?
Trying to think what's going on. I'm looking at my to-do list, which I can't show you. Well, I can talk about one of the things. I'm currently my Batman comic from last year, mm-hmm. Which was the bust of Batman with the city integrated. I'm getting that made into 3D as a full-on large bust.
Is it coming with Sideshow? Because it's a collectible?
Well, at the moment, it's one of those things. It's going to be I'll spec it out. It'll either be something very cool for the office or it'll be available. And there's another thing in the Jordan Peele universe that I'm working on in 3D. I have kind of mentioned it in our chats, but yeah, that's the next project. So I'm trying to play around with some stuff I haven't done before, which is fun. I just keep to make the job fun year after year. But print-wise and poster-wise, the studios have started calling, so there's some stuff going on there. Mm-hmm. It feels still very early in the year. Mm-hmm. But there's a long to-do list of things to do.
Yeah, I mean, you have released in the last year the Old Boy poster for DesignerCon, or was it this year already? No, it was last year, right?
It was last year, End of last year that got released. The prints it's printed now, so I got some proofs of that.
Yeah.
But that's my last, I guess, full-on release.
Exactly, I just pulled it up. There's the regular version, it's the red one, right? And variant is the yellow-green one. And give us some details because I think that's really cool to know about all the strokes.
Sure. Originally had the idea for this. It was when the Spike Lee version remake came out, which was whenever that was.
2013 or something like that.
Yeah, I actually when the teaser came out for that, I drew a little very quick thing with Brolin and stuff and did the whole strokes thing. Once again, very bad at drawing back in those days. Fast forward as we have, I want to revisit that idea and actually base it on the original. So started just sketching it out for fun. As I always do, I think the best projects come from fun. Shared it with a few people, shared it with the guys that spoke. They really liked the idea. We did some art directing and we cropped it from where it was. I did some redrawing and it was just one of those fun ones. It's sometimes nice to get lost in the piece that you're doing. And the whole strokes and count thing, it's 5,000 something strokes to create the piece, and everything's layered up. So it's if someone asks, is that the exact amount, I can show you the layered file, and each tally has its own layer. So it's all there. So it's a fun sort of thing to do. Okay. It's it's making the process part of the story, which is always fun thing to do with my work. That was a fun one from last year. So it's finally, I think, going out to people in the next week or two.
Awesome.
And I got to do some fun stuff with the printing as well. Because I haven't done a screen print in a while.
I'm pulling this up now, people can see the close-up. I think you've shared also on the socials. And this one looks pretty cool. So what is the special about this one?
Yeah, so we've all done screen prints here. We've all bought screen prints here. And it's black is always generally the last layer you put on there. But if you layer your stuff up right and you can hide textures within your work, so even though it's black, depending whatever's printed underneath the previous color, you can actually bring out extra textures that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do with an extra screen, or you don't want to do an extra screen or an extra color. So I use some of the motif of the wallpaper and
I just wanted to ask
on where the black part of where the black part of the hair is. So it's here's a nice little bit of underprint you normally wouldn't see at all, but you'll get, if you hit the light just right, you'll get this little texture, which is a nice little Easter egg for people who know what that pattern is. So I guess that's one of the pros of screen printing.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, yeah.
Hide little things.
We talk a little deeper, obviously, a little later, but you also have some DC and Marvel stuff coming up, and you teased this probably as well. This hand is definitely a hand that goes through time, yeah?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's in the last stages of sign-off, so, but I don't jinx it. But yeah, drawing The Flash at the moment, or I finished drawing The Flash just last week. Very much just a very painterly piece. A lot of fun to draw. And I think it was my first thing that I've enjoyed drawing this year, just because I haven't drawn a lot. So that was a lot of fun. I won't share more than that.
Of course.
Because it still has to come out and still has to get full approval. But I thought I'd give you a couple of teasers of what's coming this year.
Yeah, and Loki season 2.
Yeah, so it's based on the piece that I did with Marvel UK last year. Really enjoyed that piece. And the initial brief was, hey, pick an art style from some point in time, because, you know, time traveling and everything else. And I picked like Dadaism again, because I really enjoy that art style and trying to ape on that. So that was the piece. Everyone really enjoyed it. I enjoyed drawing it. So it's like, got in touch with B&G. I was like, let's do a version of this based on the original art, but let's take it slightly differently. And now I've had the pleasure of actually watching the entire series, so I can bring in more of that insight. So that's at the final stages of sign off, where just one, the print basically needs to be, the print preview just needs to be signed off. So we're pretty much there. So I can safely share that with you, the teaser anyway.
Sounds good. And yeah, if we need one more person for book volume 2, then I guess Dadaism is in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. And yeah, Matt, I mean, you are also known for doing a lot of Flash stuff and comic book stuff. What's new? What's new on this end? I'll just pull up Dolly's image there, but because I don't have one of yours.
Oh no, I should have sent you a Flash cover. Yeah, so I've been doing Flash covers for the last year now. The DC reached out for issue 800, asked me to do a variant, which was my first proper DC superhero work for a while. And that went over well. And then Chris, the editor, asked me if I wanted to do variants for the first 6 issues of Cy Spurrier and Mike Deodato's run, which launched, I think, last October. So I did those, and everyone was really happy with them. So he's asked me to do another 6. So I'm doing variants all the way through to issue 12. And in fact, when we get off the call today, I'm doing a Green Arrow variant. And then next week, I've got a Teen Titans variant on deck as well. And I've also got a World's Finest, so Batman and Superman, which, oh my God, I've never drawn Batman for DC. I've done a few Batman things through Mondo, but I've never done a Batman comic cover, and getting to do Superman as well. And straight up, it was one of the best things I drew last year. I feel like people, it might be polarizing, because it's slightly, my work's been going in a direction, I'd say, in the last 6 months, and this is very much leaning into that. But yeah, I think that's in the bank. I think that might be coming out in a couple months. I think it's one for the library, so I think it will be used. It's not an issue specific cover, because the Flash pieces I've been doing are all tied to what's happening in the issues, whereas the other one, so I think the Titans one's going to be more tied to the issue, but the Green Arrow is basically a pinup. And so is the World's Finest one. So it means they can be kind of slotted in and used whenever. But yeah, they've been a blast. Indeed. I love doing comic covers.
Yeah, so much fun. But that's not the only thing you've been doing. You revisited an old piece, and it started out with like kind of a Jaws kind of almost theme, but with the fence, you know, there's a Jaws right as well.
Yeah. So next. Next Wednesday, Spoke Art and the Roxy in San Francisco are hosting a screening of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is one of my favorite movies. And the journey that piece has taken from original idea to final execution has been a long one. I originally did the sketch for it back in, I'm going to say maybe 2015. Mm-hmm. So right at the beginning of my early days working with Mondo, where I was going through a period of I'm just going to pitch every idea I've got to these guys, because I don't know how long it's going to last. And I had this sort of idea for a sketch for Eternal Sunshine, which I can't remember whether I sent it to Mo as a pitch for a soundtrack release, or whether I sent it to the boys as a poster.
I mean,
idea.
Looking at I think that's the final title treatment here. This could have been a very nice cover for a soundtrack.
Oh well, okay. So the sketch was a thing, and that's kind of sat in my hard drive for a long, long, long time. And like over the years, I've talked with like private commission groups about maybe doing it, and never quite got to it. And as anyone who's ever asked me to do a private commission knows, I say yes, and then I take forever to actually get around to doing it. So that one kind of came and went a couple of times. And then I vaguely talked about it with Spoke a couple of years ago. Again, I think I might have talked about it with Mondo about using it. And then this winter, Ken hit me up and said, hey, we want to do a screening. Are you interested? And I said, yeah. And actually, I've got a sketch. So I sent him the sketch and he said, like, this is cool, but I feel like it needs a bit more to it. And I think he was right, because the sketch was very much what I was doing mm-hmm. 10 years ago, which is not what I do now, which is, you know, everything.
Yeah.
As much of everything as possible in every piece. So I revisited it, and I've kind of added to it in a way that I think is fun and might be divisive. I don't know. It's a lot. I think it's my favorite thing I've painted recently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if you've got it up on screen now. Like the title treatment.
Yeah, I got the title treatment up, yeah.
Yeah, so the title treatment's a lot. I love Rafa Diaz's work. I think the posters that he put out through Mondo are some of the best stuff that Mondo did in the last 5 years. He's really like opened my eyes in the way that type can be used as part of a composition, in a very similar way to like what Jay Shaw was doing, you know, 10 years ago. Those guys and Hyde Sister as well, like from a design point of view, just do really good stuff that kind of like foregrounds a type treatment. So I thought I would give it a try. And like this piece is very much indebted to Rafa's style. I hope that he can see it as a tribute rather than me ripping him off. That's really not my intention, but I was very much had his work in mind when I was like trying to design this like mad wonky type treatment, which I think sort of skirts the edges of being legible. I think it works. I hope that the combination of that and the artwork, like your mind will fill in the gaps. Haha, which is symbolism. yeah, it was definitely intentional. I definitely meant to do it that way rather than making a mess and then going, can I explain this with like half-assed description?
We need an essay to understand the poster.
Yeah. But I'm super happy with it. Like it's mad, and I think it kind of tonally fits along with the film. And yeah, it's the first movie poster I've done for a minute, and it's quite nice to start like getting back into that world, because like last year I didn't do many because of the whole Mondo situation. I've done a poster for Spoke, which is sort of in not limbo exactly. We're just waiting for the right. I might as well say I've done another Lost in Translation. We're just trying to figure out the right way to release it, because there might be some other cool stuff happening with it. So that's finished and done. But yeah, apart from that, there haven't been a lot of posters for me of late, and it's quite nice to get back into the swing of like doing big, complicated pieces like that.
Of course, makes total sense. And yeah, Charm, you have been also very busy. And I mean, for you guys, if you Dolly and Matt, if you don't know, Charm and I even tried our hand in podcasting for a second. We have an episode.
We've got one episode that is staying in an archive, never to be released, because we both enjoyed recording this podcast, but yeah. I think I was just like, dude, I can't really do this many podcasts or this many other things. I can barely keep on track of my own work and just mind in general, so I'd love to come back on the podcast and be a guest. Yeah, but starting our own,
exactly,
too much.
Oh dude. me and Izzy, well, Izzy particularly, is constantly saying we should do a podcast, like we should buy our friends on it. And I'm like, yeah, we don't have time to do the things that we do currently. And I'd love it, but I just can't. And she gets really enthusiastic, and I feel bad, like I'm trying to crush her dreams. But
well,
if in 6 months you see us doing a podcast, it's because I'm like, oh, all right. We'll do it.
I even said my ideal situation would be if I come on as a guest and the other person basically does all the work. And this is how this is how Tom and I set this idea up. And even then I was like, nope, too overwhelming.
So you're a regular guest on your own podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Right, okay.
It's the way I want to teach at university. I want to be the second tutor where the first tutor runs the whole unit, sets the briefs, right. And I come in once a week and I'm like, that's good, that's crap, that's good, that's crap. That's the way I want to teach. I think I could do this. There's a way of doing this. My architecture tutors were like that, so.
You're bringing real guest lecturer vibes.
Yeah, but
more like a limited run series.
Yeah,
you know, it's 6 episodes for the year. That's all you're getting.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I suggested that we do like the award, like the award show kind of type thing. So we do like a special for these kind of things, and maybe a summer special or something like that, and then talk about the movies.
Oh yeah, we were talking about coming on right before the Oscars and the BAFTA, in between the BAFTAs and the Oscars, and just talking about the best movies of the year, and then also talking about the best movie posters of the year in relation, and then all of the alternatives ones that have been created, because I think at the moment a load of artists are doing alternatives for the best picture nominees. Loads of people are going down the Oscar series route, so it'll be fun to talk about all of those in an episode. So
indeed,
yes, I'm very happy.
And obviously you guys are, I mean, Sharm, I'm just doing this here, but these guys are obviously welcome to talk about the movies, because like the more conversation and controversy, the better.
Absolutely. Well, it's Paul Things. Basically, I don't think there's any conversation about the best films this year that doesn't start and end with Poor Things.
Technically,
because it was amazing.
One would think that, but then you have like, what about Oppenheimer? What about Killers of the Flower Moon? What about, I don't know, Anatomy of a Fall?
Oh, yeah, okay. Spider-Verse.
the one of the best things about 2023 is that it was everyone held their movies back from COVID, and then they released them in 2023. So we got the biggest year of film that we've had in a very long time. Don't expect 2024 to be as good, basically, but there were way too many films to choose from. And Poor Things is my favorite after Wonka, obviously. But I saw a documentary on how they made Oppenheimer, and I was just like, this film is insane. Like, they did everything practically, and it was so cool.
Give them the technical
awards. Yeah, fair enough. But Poor Things is right up against them for technical, because the surreal set design, the kind of all of that stuff. Yeah, well, everyone, I think, even Barbie, I think everyone is competing for the same awards because of how good their movies are. The technicolor nature of Barbie, the old style Hollywood, you know, vibes of Barbie is amazing. So yeah, I'm just happy we got the year that we got and how good it was.
Indeed.
I saw Matt shaking his head at Wonka, though. You're not a fan. you'll come back to that at some point when, you know, when you guys wise up.
Wonka's fine. It's fine to good. I'm so glad that you love it. Like, everyone has that movie that they just like think, oh, this is it. This is like Izzy and I were disagreeing about the new Netflix Orion in the Dark, the Charlie Kaufman scripted animated movie.
What's your thought on that?
I loved it. I loved it. And I think partly, I always say to her, like, if I watch a movie with my daughters and they enjoy it, like, that's automatically an extra half a star on the rating, because, like, I'm enjoying it through them enjoying it. But there were so many, like, weird, and I can see that it's not a perfect movie, but there were just, like, really weird script choices that just, like, tickled me that I just thought were amazing. And without giving too much away of it, like, it weirdly nods to Inception and kind of, like, nested stories in a way that was very sweet and very charming and kind of upended it. And then you think, oh, this feels like a Charlie Kaufman script.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a kid's version.
As I saw it, Charlie Kaufman did this. I was like, oh yeah, now it makes sense.
It really is. That is, you get that feeling. It's like, okay, fair enough. So I really liked it. And Izzy felt medium about it, but you know, I always say to like my girls, like if everyone liked the same stuff, life would be boring.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. I mean, I also enjoyed this new animated movie, The Tiger's Apprentice. I think it's on Peacock or something. But that was really cool. It has like a lot of all the mythological themes of the zodiac signs in there. So that's and that was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I had a good time watching that. But I mean, I love mythology. That's like my shit. Like my girlfriend is like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I'm like, I always like just want to sit and watch and like watch the beautiful blue colored water and all the beautiful palm trees and the sun and it's like then pairing it with the mythology, amazing.
True story. Last time I went to Florence, I found my way around from memories of playing Assassin's Creed.
Oh my god, yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, no, the Uffizi is definitely down here because I was definitely on top of that like last week.
That was also fun because I think before we went to New York in 2022, I played a lot of Spider-Man for the first time though. I played it and then and it's like, oh shit, this, and I have been to New York before, so it's like, oh yeah, I've been to these places. These look exactly like it. It's like crazy.
Yeah, love that. So,
a lot of fun, man. But Charm, you also have you started doing more artwork in the direction of analog as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, basically, I was spending too much time looking at screens for the last 5 years, and I was like, and I kept zoom. You know, I would go to my physical sketchbook and I would start zooming in on it. So I was like, and when I was 17, being an artist in my art school lessons at school, everything would be made analog. I was drawing by hand. I was kind of making things by hand. And I wanted to return to that at some point. So, you know, this year marks the year of starting to make analog paintings and kind of exhibiting more with fine art galleries and kind of trying to find this happy medium between working digitally and working traditionally and both exhibiting with pop culture and original art. And there are loads of artists that do it. Alex Pardee is one that comes to mind, that's kind of like someone that started out in more IP work and then transitioned into more kind of pop surrealism and pop culture related fine artwork. It's a fine line, but it's something that I'm excited to kind of explore. But yeah, painting by hand, I love it. I'm getting the kind of, you know, the textures in my paint and how much I kind of layer the paint down and how much it reveals or doesn't reveal. And it means I'm spending less time on the screen, which was my original intention. So yeah, I'm excited. But at the same time, I'm also doing a load of movie posters and, you know, I love them so much. And maybe there'll be a time down the line where I pitch my, you know, latest movie poster as a traditional painting and eventually those worlds start to kind of collide a little bit. It probably has to be the right project, but I'm excited. There's some new collaborators that we're all working with and new companies that are forming. So yes, I'm sure I could pitch something to some people.
Yeah, we'll speak in a second about these new companies forming. But before, I wanted to also mention, because like if you happen to be in Berlin, there's a very nice film poster exhibition going on. It's called The Big Screen, in German, Großes Kino. And Charm is lucky to be part of that, and I think James as well, but I'll tell you in which context in a second here, because they have they're showing starting 1905 till 2023, so almost 120 years of film posters they have there, all of them originals to some extent, so that's really cool to see. In the corner here, you can see there's one. This is, I think, one of the first ones that they have from the early 1900s, and it goes on to the normal like the stuff that came out lately, like for example, Barbie that had its release as a very cool key art poster, and that goes then on till newer times, and then also this was a little bit curated by me, or at least pushed in a way that the alternative movie posters have also a section there, because people, the people who did this curation, Christina Demny and I forgot the other lady, I forgot her name, I'm sorry, Mrs. Thomson, I think that's her name. I don't know her first name right now, but yeah, they I introduced myself to them and talked about the alternative movie posters, and they should be included. So very gladly that this that was included in the exhibition. You can see then there's a Charms piece, that the Dune piece for Dune 1 that he gave to the museum and the exhibition. And there are also a couple other smaller ones. And there's also a screen where other movie posters run through. So you can get different title ideas. For example, Matt Griffin's 2001 is there. Eileen Steinbach's poster, SG posters. There's a work of hers in there. James, as I said, James Hobson's Tenet is in there. And others, of course. And yeah, they've often all been credited, so people know about alternative movie posters in this sense, which is great. And also James Jean, who has done the key art, but is also coming from a from this poster perspective, from this, let's say, it's not alternative movie poster per se, but it's an alternative version of what movie posters are in general on this concept. And he gave his Everything Everywhere All at Once for the exhibition as well. So to see it in person is really cool as well.
Yeah, I mean, that Dune poster, I did it at the end of the run, the kind of marketing run for that film. I waited until the film came out and watched it, and I had everyone else had released Dune posters, and then I kind of released one for the Comic-Con later that year. And it gave me a chance to go wilder with the property, basically. That was my intention. So I have a strong feeling I'll be doing that again this year for Dune Part 2, just give the license holders a little bit of room to, you know, approve the more traditional posters. And then I'll come in with a poster that's just out of this world. And then they'll be a bit easy on the approval process.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're different in that case then. So obviously, oh, yeah, yeah, we've seen all of that. That's a good take. Let's do it.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what everyone's going to come up with for part two. I'm very excited about Matt's poster. I'm very excited about. I don't know if Akiko is going to do another one. Greg Roos, I'm sure, will do one. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I've heard, well, one of the new companies that has formed is Mutant.
Mutant.
What's that?
I think Mutant.
Mutant. And the collaborators they have. Being, right? Is it? Yes, it's one. Yes. I need to read, I need to draw that character at some point. The collaborators they have for Dune, I've had a little sneak peek, and I'm very excited to see those. So, yeah, can't wait.
Okay, yeah, it's, let's talk about that then. I mean, Mutant, for the people that are not in the know, but the scene people should probably all have heard about what happened here. Mondo, the founding people, or the early early people that worked with Mondo, they have left the company because of Funko's Funko buying that. There was some conflicts. Let's put it conflicts. I think that's politically correct, and so the people left the ship, and they stayed a little underground and kept it down low for what, like almost a year now, and yeah, they came up with a new gallery, and this is called Mutant, this gallery, and it's Eric Garza, it's Mitch Putnam, who's also in there, Matt, you know that.
It's Moshe Peak and Spencer Hickman, who are on records, and then Jenny Jacoby, who used to work as part of Alamo. She's involved, and then Daniel and Elijah from Spectrevision are sort of, because it's all happening under the Spectrevision like banner, I think, or it's like they're sort of helping, essentially kind of like fund it or like give it a home. It's a great group of people. It's, you know, the whole kind of Mondo creative team from posters and records, with the exception of Rob Jones, who's over at Vinyl Me Please now, which, you know, it's a shame not Rob's not involved as well, but Rob's doing amazing stuff over at Vinyl Me Please. So, you know, I can't be mad
about
that.
not to market other podcasts on this podcast, but Rob guests on the Art Affairs podcast with Michael Faith, and he talks about everything that happened during that time period in which, you know, things were transitioning, and he gives a very kind of like great explanation about what was going on in that situation. So have a listen to that episode, because it's really, really informative about the whole thing.
Yes, indeed. If you want to know more, go there. That's definitely helping. I contacted already the Mutant guys if they want to come on for the podcast and talk about the new founder gallery and maybe give a little backstory. So it is clearer to understand, especially the people that are in kind of in the know of what is going on, to at least in the scene, being in the scene in the know. But obviously, everything is very hard to grasp for people that are just buying posters at the end of the day. So, and wondering why things went a certain way and why things have been not released, or why there's a problem of releasing it. So, yeah, have a listen to that. And hopefully we can have a chat with the Mutant guys and gals in the future.
It sounds like they're doing some great things, because what they came out with was soundtracks, a fine art print, and a film poster. You know, it sounds like they're kind of trying to explore slightly, you know, more directions with the fine art print, the Aaron Hawkey one. So, yeah, it's really exciting to see what they've got. And there's a couple of variety articles about what they're planning and you know, how they formed and stuff. So, yeah, have a look.
Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, the Variety article has, like, the list of people that they are working with currently, and it's, like, a proper murderer's row of talent. I mean, you know, I'm on there, so that's
oh, nice. Yeah, but, okay, so Deb Lee is on there, too, and they have... I've seen a sneak peek of their work. Oh, my goodness me, yeah. That is the one I'm most excited about.
yeah, same. Yeah. I'm so excited that Deb is working with Mutant, because their work is absolutely incredible and deserves like the widest possible. Their Ready Player One private commission was so good that it made me want to own it, and I hate Ready Player One. Like, with a real with a real visceral passion. I hate Ready Player One, but I saw the poster that they did, and I thought, oh, I want that. It's so good. Indeed. Everything they've done. Also, Deb's lovely.
Check out the podcast. I had them on the show, and it was fun talking to them. So it was a good chat.
I was so lucky. Izzy and I were out in LA for Lightbox Expo in October. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to meet Deb in real life, because I've chatted with them online a little bit. And I sort of went up and said, hi, I'm Matt from Instagram. I like your work. And they just came around and gave me a huge hug. And we just ended up talking about art and posters for a minute. And yeah, they're an absolute delight. And the fact that they're getting a bigger, I mean, they don't need a big platform. They're doing kick-ass books, working with amazing international clients. But I'm so excited to see them exploding into this space, because just absolutely one of my favorite artists right now.
I heard there's I don't know if that's still happening, but I need to reach out again. There's a book tour happening for the book they done, and I think they're going abroad, even I think there are a couple schools they're visiting. I think even in Germany and UK, but I'm not sure about it, but I think that's happening. So yeah, and there's this great poster. Oh, I didn't know you had that.
we've done an exchange.
There you go.
this is an Everything Everywhere private commission, and Deb and I are exchanging Everything Everywhere private commission posters. So whenever mine gets it's finished, whenever it gets released is another question, and then eventually I will send them a copy of that one. So yeah. That's right. We've been chatting too, and they're great. I agree with Matt. I have a slightly softer spot for Ready Player One than other people do, but that, it could have been done so much better. Anyway.
It could have not been done at all. Steven Spielberg could have just made another film and not made Ready Player One.
Yeah.
It's a trash book, and it's a trash film.
Dolly, what's your thought on this?
It's being done in real life with the Apple Vision Pro, so you know we're going to get a real life version of it.
Another thing I hate.
I know. I don't see any. Why are they making that thing anyway?
Dolly, what's your thought?
Yeah, Dolly, thoughts on Ready Player One book and movie?
I watched it and it was like okay, and then I haven't had the need to watch it again. Is one of those things. I was actually drawing sketches for it because I was actually asked by the studio to do some stuff. Did some sketches, didn't make it past the sketch stage, so I guess that was leaves you a little bit disgruntled as well about stuff. It was one of those films. It was throwaway in its nature. I think it might have. I haven't read the book, so I think it's one of those things. It's probably more befitting to the book when we're not living in the world where this sort of thing happens already. You look at video games like Fortnite and stuff, they're already doing that. So this wasn't like a new thing.
Dolly, you must have been you must have been a little bit offended because they chose the dystopian future setting, the real life setting, as your home city of Birmingham.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was filmed down the road. Like my first design job was where that was being filmed. So when I watched it, that was one of the reasons I did watch it. It's like, oh, I know that place. The sandwich shop was across the road. This was there. The office was right there. So that was a bit of fun, to be honest. But outside of that, it was a one watch, I would say. Like, yeah, we all love like the Easter eggs and stuff like that. That's the child in you that loves that stuff. But as a story and everything else, it's not something I've needed to revisit.
Yeah,
I will say the film is better than the book. The book is... I'm not even going to start on it. And the film, because it's Spielberg. And I think Spielberg, I don't think he's capable of making a bad film. And I think the script for the movie sort of makes some choices which sand off some of the rough edges around what I really dislike about the book. Okay. But yeah, it's throwaway. It's like, yeah, I get it. Yeah. Like, yeah. Knowing about pop culture stuff is cool. So yeah, well done. You can win the girl as a prize by knowing about what fucking ride songs are. I'm not going to start.
Yeah. There's a second book though. Now.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Ready Player Two.
Yeah. Opted not to get into that one. We don't need to give that.
We might get
franchise that any more time, but we can maybe have a conversation about it off.
Talk about good films. I did watch the Holdovers.
Oh, that was
last
great.
Week. Loved it. It was that nice blend of. I needed that as a film, yeah. Like, because it was such a like. Not to say it's different. These are the films we were getting like in the 90s and the early 2000s, and we just haven't had stuff like this and like, you know, a consistent basis. So it was beautiful, like Brush of Fresh Air, to watch a film like that. Like hints of Dead Poets Society, hints of Scent of a Woman,
yeah.
In a good way. Just really enjoyed it. It was just like mood setter, house to myself, just let's watch a film, let's not do dual screening, let's just watch a film. Really enjoyed it.
What do you guys
think? Really
that was something.
What do you guys think about, like, because it's an Oscar contention, and it is people are like, I heard like this, that one critic that I enjoy was saying basically, this is just very Oscar formulaic movie. It's not. It shouldn't be there in the contention.
I disagree with that entirely. It belongs in that. It belongs in that list because if you look at the rest of the list, it's. Big auteur film directors, or it's big kind of like, you know, capital A acting in movies, whereas this one is almost like a throwback to films that from the 70s upwards. And I think it's a good sign that these kind of movies can be made moving forward and compete with these other films. So I think it belongs in there. From an awards point of view, all awards are bullshit. But from, you know, if awards are good for anything, they're meant to tell the audience, like, this is the breadth of film that you can, you know, that is available to you and you can choose what you want from it. So from that point of view, I'm happy that it's in there. And it's a great film.
Yeah, I mean...
And also, like...
I go with Get It Along as well. It's a great film. It's like, because like my best movies of 2023 list include like what, six or seven Indian movies that are not even in contention anywhere on the Western side of things. So it's like people are missing out, I think. But also,
I find,
also,
you know, the
four, so.
Yeah, the comment of like it's a like Oscar bait film.
Yeah,
is that because it's a nice film, well made, with good actors, a really good script, a good soundtrack and like really interesting direction, surely then every film should be Oscar bait. Like it's not Oscar bait, and it's like it's a story about someone overcoming adversity, or you know, something like I haven't seen Zone of Interest yet because the subject matter I can't deal with in the cinema, I need to watch it at home. That feels like a film that is necessary and important, and it has a thing to say. And I feel like when people talk about like Oscar bait films, that's sort of what I feel like. And I feel like that's probably going to be like the absolute best example of that kind of film. But something like The Holdovers, it's just a great movie. It's just a really great movie. Like all films should be that good. There's no reason that all films shouldn't like have that blend of like being heartwarming and touching. And there's not like a message to it. It's just, here is a lovely story about some people existing together. Like the fact that people think that is Oscar bait, I find maddening. Like that should just be films.
This is the thing, because I found out in my list of the best movies of 2023, I think eight or seven of them, I cried in the movie, like watching the movie while watching the movie. So I found out like the more crying is in there for me, the more it hits me emotionally, the more it's up on the list for me. So it's like a weird thing. So, but
An emotional response is good.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Art should move you.
That is for sure. Speaking of art that should move, we wanted to talk a little bit also about
nice transition.
About Prince, obviously, and the technique behind it and the way you guys set up all your artwork in this case, because I'm speaking from a collector's perspective, buyer's perspective here, and I have to say there have not been as many posters where I was like, oh snap, I need to buy this poster in the last year. There was like kind of like an overflow of the same. Let's put it this way, in a certain way, and I got a little bit tired of this. Even like for example, when James and I reviewed like all the posters that came out all the time, it felt so repetitive, and I have to say boring. Even that, I wonder sometimes some galleries, what are they doing? What's happening here, people? And that also boils down to the collectors itself in a certain way that they. 90% of the people just want screen prints. Oh, I have the feeling that's at least the people who are loud about it. And you can hear in like, for example, in commission groups or reverse commissions, like people are asking, hey, would a G-Clay be okay for you so we can have it done, because all the screen printers are like overflowing with the work they have to do. And but people are like, no, if it's not a screen print, I'm not going to buy it. And that's a weird sentiment. But I want to hear about you guys' standpoint on like, or how maybe this conception of that it has to be a screen print can be broken down.
I mean, I can start on that. Like, I don't think everything should be a screen print, basically. I think the scene that exists now grew out of the gig poster scene, really. Because if you look at the people who originated like all Moby posters, Todd Slayers, Rob Jones, Frank Kozik's, like they all came from music. They all came from gig posters. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that the origination of Mondo and that kind of birthed this alt poster scene that we have now. And that was born specifically out of taking like a gig poster style approach to movies. Gig posters were screen printed sort of for a reason, because it was at the time, I think, maybe a sort of slightly cheaper way of doing an interesting collectible. And all the artists who sort of were those originators were artists who worked in screen print. And so because they were all artists that worked in screen print, I might be wrong, by the way, I'm just giving you my thought on it.
It's your take.
Yeah, okay, my take. All of those artists were artists who had either were screen printers or knew a lot about the techniques. And so they design their work in a way that screen printing, it feels natural. Like you look at someone like Daniel Danger, who's a wizard artist, but also prints all his own work. He like implicitly understands the way that screen printing works. So anything that Dan does is going to look amazing screen printed because he knows what he's doing. And the same with people like Kozik and Rob and Slater and I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna have to think of some other people. They're just the ones at the top of my head. Like those guys, they understood the process and it was all kind of linked together. They were artists that worked in a medium. They understand how it works. They understand the limitations specifically. And then it sort of just becomes the default because let's be honest, screen prints are nice. There's something very appealing about a tangible, real piece of work that someone has produced by hand. And then because it becomes the default, that's what we all do. And like I've done a tiny, tiny bit of screen printing, but not enough for me to really understand the process of how to actually make art that screen prints well. And I've been lucky that I've had access to people like Danger, like Phantom City and Jason Edmondson, whose knowledge is like incredible about like separating art, who are able to advise me on like, this is how you make it look good. But, you know, my first poster for Mondo was like a 3-color print, I think. Where was that?
It was here. Glass fell outside.
That's fine. I just wondered if it was like in my kitchen. My first prints were very, very limited colors because I sort of thought from talking with guys like, you know, like guys like Ollie Moss, and Danger early doors about like how to make work for screen print. I've kind of taught myself, but the last posters that I was doing for Mondo were kind of like 10, 12 color prints. They shouldn't really be screen prints. And you notice this when you get the prints in. Now, again, caveat here. I am very lucky that DNL print all of mine, and DNL are like literal wizards. I do not know how they get everything trapped and to the point where like it's like pixel accurate every time. So they do incredible versions of my work. But like even I concede that a lot of my work should not be screen printed. It should be a giclée because a giclée would give a better representation of the actual piece that I've created. But we sort of become trapped in this system where it's become what is expected. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you only have to look at something, and this is in no way a reflection on the printers, the artists or the studio, but the reprints that had to happen of, I think it was Gabs's Lord of the Rings. Now I love Bottleneck. I love Gabs, and I think it was Lady Lazarus who were printing.
I think so too, yeah.
All those people involved are amazing at what they do, but that piece should not have been a screen print. It was too dense. It was too complicated.
36 colors.
Let's angle my camera around. I've got a Chuck Close print up here, which is a 120 color screen print.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was produced and it's in an edition of 50. Mm-hmm. And it costs like $8,000 because that's what 150 color screen print should cost, because it is literal fine art. Like it is done by a tiny team of people working pinpoint accuracy. A 13 color screen print should not cost $50. You're mad. It's madness to think it should cost that much. It should cost 200. It should cost 300. It should cost 500, because that's the only way that you can pay the people for the time to make sure it is that pinpoint accurate. Mm. And collectors don't want to pay $200 for a 13 color screen print. Yeah,
technically it is basically, the question arises is that, do you buy the art of the artist or do you buy the art of the printer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The printers that Chuck Close worked with were like master craftsmen within their field. And again, that is no disrespect to Lazarus and Burlesque and DNL, who are all masters in their field as well.
Yeah. And mistakes.
But they had to crank out like 200 prints because they've got to crank out 200 prints because they've sold 200 prints. Or even Jesus, like my Endgame poster, there was a print run of like 4,000 or something crazy.
Hmm.
how? There is no way that you can, that they are getting paid enough to be as precise as they need to be. And I feel like there needs to be a change in how we look at work. And like, I know I said this years ago and someone put it on a mug that like not everything has to be a print, which has come back to bite me a few times, but I don't think everything has to be a screen print. I think, in fact, let's do another one. There's a nice James Jean print there. That's a giclée. It's one of my favorite bits of art in the house. It's and that's a perfectly, you know, that's been printed. You say giclée and you think, oh, it's a digital print. It's not. Like the process that it goes through, again, by like a fine artist giclée printer, is as involved as a screen print, and it is as beautiful a final piece, and it is as what's the word I'm looking for? It's as much a piece of art as that screen print, or that screen print which you can just see in the corner over there. I can't really zoom in, it's in the hallway. You know, and it's as much a piece of art as those are pieces of art. And I think that you would probably open the scene up to more artists if we removed that like barrier of it must be a screen print. Because like my partner Izzy wants to make posters, and she's great. I mean, I'm biased because I love her, but I think she's a great artist, but her work does not translate to screen print. And I think that any screen print of her work would be a, would reduce it basically. Mm. But I also know that that is what the scene, the collectors want. So it's a barrier. And like, there are so many good artists that you think, oh, man, I wish you were making like posters for the alt post scene. So I think you bring something new and fresh to the world. But
I also heard from James in a while back, maybe Dolly or Sharm, you guys know about this as well and can say more about it. But James told me that there's this new digital printing form where you can actually do multi layers on that print, or like have like something like the if you like similar to, let's call it digital screen printing in that kind of way. But yeah, Dolly, you're nodding. So
yeah, I might mess up the names, but I think, believe it's called like indigo printing. Yeah. But yeah, it works in a very layered form. So you are printing in a sense color by color, and that allows you stuff to do like foils and silvers and different finishes and UV layers. So I think it's like the best of both worlds, where the art doesn't suffer in the sense of, if you do draw something very painterly and then you have to then pare it back to become a screen print, because that's the most annoying thing. You draw something beautifully as you do and say, okay, well, I'm going to have to like, you know, change the layer and put everything to dissolve and so forth. And you get this very bitty print for something that was very soft brush. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that seems to be the new thing. I want to test it out and see how it translates and everything else. Like, I'm not fussed about the process as much as I am what the final output is. If it can represent the art in how it should be, then that's brilliant. And if the community, because they understand the process, are, you know, they like that, and sense in the sense of like, hey, this is something we're actually on board with, then great. Then it allows you a bit more freedom in a sense from a creator's point of view to create what you want. And it allows like more people through the door, because they are amazing people. And I've done like chats with people, it's like, oh, how would this work as a screen print? And I was like, okay, you're gonna have to pare this down, you're gonna have to do that. And it's heartbreaking to say to someone that's created something beautifully, that's not built for a screen print. Or I've seen certain people's work translated to screen print after the fact, and it's just like, I much preferred like what the digital version of that art would have been. My last screen print that I did was my The Shining. And that very much was like an ode to what, like when I got into the industry, what screen prints were. It's four colors. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's the reason to have a screen print, because it's that many colors. And then like the recent work that I've been doing is more studio based, where it's not for prints. It's like, it's Scream, it's Ninja Turtles. And I've thrown every brush and every color under the sun, you know, to it. And that's, and it lends itself to the art, and I didn't have that worry. So I really want to, like, when I do screen prints, it needs to be a screen print for a reason. If I want to do something that's fully throw everything at it, then I don't want it to be a screen print, because I feel like the output's going to be less than. And I'll look at the picture on my phone, and it looks better on my phone than it does in the print. Mm. And that's not the way it should be. That's not how it should
be. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sharm?
I, as an artist and a collector, the kind of the format or the... I buy it for the artwork. I actually buy it for the artwork, whether that's printed to me or even, I hate to say it, whether it's a digital NFT, if I was into that stuff, I would be getting it for the artwork, right? I don't collect NFTs, thank goodness.
Big asterisks there.
When I release prints, I do a the last two of my personal art prints that I've released, it's a digital print because it's got almost like 1,000 colors in there. And I've, to make the fans kind of like excited about the print, I have added this more tactile element, which is a single screen printed layer of like gold or silver or hollow foil, for example. And then I show the process of that being made. And that is what I found a kind of exciting way to sell a print, when you can show it being made. Matt mentioned James Jean. I could collect a lot of James Jean's artwork. It's all G-clay, but it goes through this process of certain elements have been foiled on top or have been embossed on top or something. You know, one of my friends, Hattie Stewart, this is a risograph book that she's released. And it's the risograph printing. What happens is you get the image on the front, but, you know, what happens on the back? You know, it's kind of like they're real art pieces. And I think art... I think it has a lot to do with screen printing. Maybe the fans of the poster fans, a lot of our industry is based on resale, right? On putting these posters up on eBay. And I think fans have, you know, come to the conclusion that a screen printed poster is worth more on a resale value than a G-clay print for some reason. Maybe it's because the number of screens or the process that goes into it. But yeah, I don't really know. I'm rambling a bit here, but I think it's probably to do with asking the fans to kind of look into the processes that we want to release the art in that isn't screen printing, and kind of show the value in the actual process of that print, or even just show the process of the art. You know, I'm starting to paint now, so I have to find a way to translate my original painting into a print. How am I going to do that myself? So yeah, I it's a lot to do with the resale value, which is why screen printing is preferred more than G-clay printing. And we have to show the fans that like, it's more to do with the artwork and the actual making of the artwork and the final results of it. I don't know. maybe you guys can help me here. What do you think about that?
It's that tactile nature of the art as well. Like every time I've been at a convention or like a table at a convention, everyone that I've walked past and seen a piece of art, they touch it and they do this.
Yeah.
And it's everyone wants that something that feels real, that doesn't feel digital. It feels handmade. It feels like there's extra value to it. And not necessarily because it's screen printing, but even the paper quality and so forth. People love that. So I think there's something there. And I think it's an educational thing. People just see G-clay as digital printing, and you know, digital printing, we use that from everything, you know, from flyers to, you know, magazines to everything under the sun. And I don't think they understand what a really good G-clay print is. Mm-hmm. And people aren't showing that off enough. There's not enough on every table when we go to a con that, oh, look at the quality. You can still feel like I felt this. I can't remember, it was years ago, but I felt this. I was like, is this a screen printer? No, that's G-clay, but I could feel the ink on it. You know what I mean? From when I went from paper to ink. And that's where a really good G-clay is. So you still get that tactile feel of something real and not just something very glossy, flat digital print, which you would use for a business card. So I think there's that element. I think enough people either need to bite the bullet and do it, and then people see what a good quality version is that's affordable as well, that everyone, because not everyone can afford a James Jean. So there's a place there. I mean,
I can't afford them either, man. I can't afford them either.
You say, yeah, no, only a few people can. But it's just like, I think if people can see it out there and either do smaller versions, it doesn't have to be 18 by 24, it doesn't have to be 24 by 36. But if we can show them and educate the user, and it's like, this is what good quality printing is, regardless of the medium, I think you'd want that print. So yeah, there's a bit there. Like, it would stop us as artists like having to create something and then feel like we have to pare it back for the medium, because that's generally, no one wants to work that way, do they? They want to just be able to produce what they want to produce.
Well, I think also, I mean, there's nothing like opening a box of screen prints. Like you can't get the depth of color, like the vividity of color, vividness,
vividness.
Sorry, my brain's just broken. Brightness. You can't get like the sort of like that saturation that you can with screen printing. Like, it's magical. I still remember over my like Thor Ragnarok prints, and I just like, holy shit. Like, I was just not prepared for like how bright they were, and it was beautiful. It's amazing. But I think because of the way that the poster scene has developed, like you say, it originated with artists who were like educated in that field. Like, they knew the rules, not the rules, but like they knew how to get the most out of the medium that they were working in. And I think what we have now is we have a lot of artists who just make cool art, and then we sort of figure out how to like wrangle it into a format which somehow has become the like preferred, or like the way, like take someone like Cillian Eng, who is just the most beautiful, incredible illustrator. I've seen a couple of his screen prints that I thought looked great, but I think the better work of his is the stuff that Black Dragon put out, which is the kind of, you know, and they're called fine art prints because they are fine art.
Mm-hmm. I have the difference. The Botanist, I think I have as the G Clay version, which is really nice, and the colors are also like popping really, really well. Okay. With the red. And I have for example, his Akira in the back here, on top of
it. Yeah.
And do you see the difference? But yeah, this is also nice charm. Way to just.
Yeah, I've got art down there as well. I could get my art box out.
No, I just wanted to, you know, I'm trying to show the tangible, real thing in your hands, you know?
I agree.
Those are those Cillian Eng prints Giclées? Are they fine art prints as Giclées, or are they screen prints?
No, the fine art ones are Giclée.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're as powerful to me without it being screen printed. It's because of the artwork itself is the thing that people like about the work. It's the detail in the penmanship, and it's the, you know, so whether that thing would have been screen printed or Giclée printed, it didn't matter to me. It was the piece itself that I gravitated towards.
Well, even if you take someone like Paul Mann, who seems to be quite a big thing in like the poster scene now, like, again, I have seen a couple of his prints and they do look good, but they are also like 25 color prints. And I feel like if you're having to push that hard to, someone like Danger designs for screen print in mind. Someone like Paul Mann is just like painting beautiful paintings. And then you're putting it through the fucking ringer to try and emulate that. And I don't understand why. Because the original art is the art. It's the painting he painted. Why does the reproduction have to be, why do you have to like strangle it to make it replicable in a way that some people think is like worthwhile? Why can not just like a beautiful Giclée that like, you know, someone will photograph that or scan it and will make it. And I sort of feel the same way about like, and again, this is no shade thrown against people who do this, but like, a Jaws print, I know Mondo did this, like a Jaws print is a screen print. It's like, cool, I guess, but
why?
Why? Why? Yeah. Why are you, it's not the format it was originally intended. It's not even like that's what the posters were made back in the day. They were fucking cheaply printed one sheets. That is the authentic version of that art. Mm-hmm. Like a 1976 rolled one sheet of the Jaws poster. That is it. That is the version of the art. A fine art version of that just feels like, I'm trying to think of an example, some other, it's like a fucking Louis Vuitton Air Force One. Why does it exist? It's like you're making something fancy that doesn't need to be fancy. And the fanciness of it is almost like working against the original intention of it. Like, it's a fucking basketball sneaker. Like, it doesn't need to be made out of, I mean, it looked cool, I guess, but why does that thing exist? Why does the screen printed Jaws poster exist? It's to say a scene who that is the only thing they'll buy. You couldn't just put out like a beautiful high quality Giclée of that. It's got to be made into a screen print, because otherwise people will go, no, thank you, which just is fucking absurd.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm burning all the goodwill I have in the poster community.
So, but
I still love making screen prints. I knew this was going to happen.
So to sum it all up, basically here, this little conversation, I would say education is needed and has not to come from the artists. It has to come from the galleries who put out the screen prints or the artwork in general. So if they would educate the people more, obviously there would be a change in attitude towards certain ways to be printed. And I hope this will happen. This will happen in this year. So we can have, especially looking into the future a little bit, have more diverse prints and have more fun with the prints. I mean, G-Clays cost also a lot. It's not cheap, but maybe we can find also another form of printing that is cheaper, but it gives us a very good quality prints that more people can enjoy it. Matt.
Bringing it back, one last thing, bring it back around to Mutant, who are talking about like their first release is a non-screen print Aaron Hawkey edition, which is like beautifully embossed and like it's got textural elements, like exactly what we're talking about, like Sean was talking about with his mm-hmm. prints with screen printed elements, and it's fucking beautiful. Like but Aaron is an artist who obviously I don't know, I've never really spoken to, but he understands screen printing because he came up through that poster scene, but he also paints, and like that what Mutant have done is the best way to share an edition size of that artwork, and well done, like that's great, more of that. And
it's really
Jane,
the way
like,
they
yeah
the way they market the poster as well. They kind of show these slow videos of the print being seen, so you can really see the textual elements before you make your purchase. You can see the quality of it without seeing it in person. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah,
no and from chatting with Eric, you know, he did a couple of weeks ago, he said, you know, they were looking, because I was talking about a print I'm working on at the moment, and I sort of said, you know, what are we doing, like, because a bit of inside baseball, like when we're working with Mondo, they very rarely ask me to like limit my colors, which is why you end up with fucking 10 color Avengers posters. But like, I know Mutant are new, they're starting out, like I don't want to bankrupt them with a 15 color screen print. And so I said, you know, where are we at? Like, what are our limitations in what we can do? And, you know, they're wonderful. They said, you know, you do what you want to do to make the poster sing. But they also said, you know, we're looking at what we can do. And Aaron's print is they're setting their stall right out the gate. They're saying it's not just screen prints. We're just going to make great art, and we're going to present it in the format that best serves that art. You know, maybe I'll do something from that winds up being a G-Clay where I can like properly go wild with colors. You know, I'm doing work much like Sharm, like I'm trying to push into analog work that isn't just digital stuff, that's like drawing and watercolor and mixing paints and pencils and stuff together, and like kind of like be able to do a poster like that one day and then not have to try and break my brain to figure out how do I turn this into a screen print when it was never meant to be.
You should try figuring out how to translate your work into the public realm. It's fucking difficult.
yeah, Charm had a sculptures going on. That was crazy.
Yeah.
A sculpture. I've pitched my next public art project. I probably won't get it because it's ridiculous. But it's like a canopy that runs 100 meters long and sits on top of two structures, and then there are two giant inflatables sticking out of the top of it. I have no idea how to build that kind of thing, but what you do is you design it. Former architect, forgotten everything he knows about the industry. But what you do is you pitch the project, and then you work with the best people that can translate that thing into reality, you know? So I trust the collaborators, and you have to put it to the collaborators and say, hey, how can we release the best G-Clay print that will gather kind of fans for this thing? Or we could do this to it, or we could do that to it. You know, it's up to everyone to kind of talk to one another a bit more about, releasing the best thing for the format that it needs to be in.
Indeed. Alrighty, guys. Then for you out there who have been listening, watching, please let us know in the comments your thoughts maybe on the screen print, G-Clay, or whatever kind of way to translate a print into reality. Is your preferred or why even? And maybe we get different perspectives there as well from the collector's side, but also maybe some other artists chime in. Would be really nice to hear from you. And yeah, now I would give you guys a last word if you want to say a couple things before we out. Dolly, you can start.
I have no idea. kicking off the year, lots of fun things planned, lots of like 3D things planned, doing stuff outside of posters. I love posters, but I just want to expand what I'm doing, and not everything needs to be a poster. There's certain bits of art that lend themselves to being tactile and held. So that's some fun stuff planned for the year. Hopefully they can pull them all off.
All right, Matt.
That's it.
Please buy my Eternal Sunshine poster from Spoke when it drops next week. So Spoke, let me do more prints. And yeah, that's I can't talk about anything else I'm doing at the moment.
There's
fun stuff happening, and I'm so sorry for alienating the poster community, as I seem to whenever I do a podcast. I do like it. On. I do love it.
Sure.
I've made a few private commission film posters that are yet to be revealed, but when those come out, I'll be excited for those. I've got something in the works with Mutant, something in the works with Vinyl Me Please. And then I am making my own original artworks, both giclées and originals. And I've just released a kind of print called Styx, which has got a cast of characters being ferried off to the dead, which is fun
for everybody.
They're all having a good time in full Technicolor. Yes, exactly. So please check that out. But other than that, just keep an eye out for everything we're up to, and yeah, get in touch.
Indeed. And yeah, shout out to James, who could be here today, but he has also some really cool stuff with Moore Art coming. We heard a little tease here and there, and it's going to be amazing. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well. And yeah, thank you everybody for tuning in, and thank you guys for stopping by. It has been such a pleasure as always, and see you guys soon. Bye-bye.